Welcome back, my friends, to The Overlap. This is Joshua. I am currently sitting in my home office here in Oklahoma, watching the status LEDs on my server rack flicker like a distressed lighthouse. If you are a longtime listener, you know that we usually spend our time dissecting the slow motion car crash of modern systems, right? But today, it feels like the car has finally hit the wall and we're just watching the hubcap spin in the dirt. I want you to take a second wherever you are and just gesture widely around the room that you're in. Look at the smart light bulbs, the voice assistants, the tablets, that smart TV that's almost certainly taking high-resolution screenshots of your living room right now to sell them to a data broker in Singapore. This is the big stack life that we are sold, right? It was supposed to be convenient. It was supposed to be seamless. But as of February 18th, the big stack is not just failing. It's actually cannibalizing its own users. We are on currently, day four of the great partial shutdown of 2026. Now, I want to stick to the objective facts here because speculation is for people with more optimism than I currently possess. This is a targeted functional paralysis. While the Department of Defense, the Department of War and the Department of Education or the Department of Ignorance are doing just fine because their funding was pushed through in the last minute continuing resolution. The Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Labor, and Health and Human Services have been effectively defunded since Saturday. The negotiations in Washington, D.C. are pretty much a total stalemate. This means the people who guard our digital borders at CISA, if you're not familiar, it's the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. They're currently designated as accepted employees. That is a beautiful government euphemism for essential enough to work, but not important enough to get a paycheck. We are asking the people who defend our national power grid, our water treatment plants, and our subsea fiber cables from state-sponsored logic bombs to do it as a volunteer gig while they wonder how they're going to pay their mortgage in March. It's a bold and almost poetic level of structural neglect. And while the government is busy having a documented identity crisis, right, the market has decided to pull the rug out from underneath our feet. I went online this morning to buy a simple like 32 gig of DDR4, not even the DDR5, DDR4 RAM. Now, this is going to be a nerdy podcast. If you're just tuning in, if you're just figuring out what this podcast sounds like, this might not be the one for you, but I'm kind of a nerd here and Will's not here with me today. So it's going to get a little bit deep in the weeds of the nerddom. But I tried to buy 32 gigs of DDR4 RAM for a server project that I have been putting off. I honestly thought I had accidentally typed the price for a used Vespa. It was $400. Last year, that exact same kit was like $100. 99 on a bad day, and you could get them for around 89 on sale. That's not just inflation. That's a commodity war. We are seeing AI companies decide that they need every single chip of memory on the planet to feed their digital god, and you, the lowly home laborer in the suburbs, are an acceptable casualty in their quest for digital godhood. We are seeing hard drive manufacturers like Western Digital selling out their entire 2026 production run to 7 corporate clients, leaving the rest of us to fight over the scraps like we're a digital version of the Hunger Games. I can't even begin to tell you, a 2 terabyte hard drive that I bought in November for $129 is $289 for like a SATA 3 SSD. And if you're a nerd like me, that's like an old tech. It's a decent size for storing some information, but like it's an old drive. It's pretty sad. I want you to really think about what that means, okay? If CISA is on a skeleton crew and Western Digital and Crucial is only taking calls from Amazon and Google, who is actually looking out for the small stack? Who is making sure the firmware on your router isn't being hijacked while the federal regulators are at home on furlough? The answer is nobody. You are on your own. This episode is actually about the small stack manifesto. It's about kind of why your home lab is no longer just a hobby for nerds who like blinking lights. It's kind of a defensive posture. It's almost a survival strategy. It's about why I'm currently wiping my servers and moving to like a raw Debian-based system where I own the code, I own the hardware, and I'm the only one with the keys to this kingdom. So I want to talk about the rise of the electro state, where power is defined by who owns the microkernels in your toaster. We're going to talk about why the 2026 hardware famine is making right to repair the most radical political stance you can take in the modern age. But most importantly, we're going to talk about the mesh. We're going to look at why a group of us here at home are strapping solar-powered LoRa nodes to our roofs and our chimneys. Because when the big stack gets paralyzed by a budget fight or a 100% tariff, the small stack keeps the signal alive. We're moving beyond the, like, we're screwed sentiment of our previous episodes and moving into the, like, how to be unscrewable phase of our existence. Because the reality is 2026 is a landscape that the infrastructure we rely on is being treated like a luxury good. You remember when I said teeth were luxury bones? Well, now electricity is a luxury item? I don't know. When you have a government that cannot pay its cyber defenders and a market that will not sell you a hard drive, you have to stop being a user and start being an administrator. You have to move from the vertical to the horizontal. And this isn't just about technology. It's about sovereignty. It's about ensuring that when the monolith that exists in our Google-oriented world finally cracks under the weight of its own tariffs and shutdowns, that you're not left standing in the dark wondering why your smart home won't let you in the front door. I know some of you are probably thinking that this sounds a little bit extreme. I get it. You might think that this shutdown will end in a week and the hardware prices will eventually stabilize, but that's the like normalcy bias talking. You probably grew up in a different system in a different time where eventually all things kind of worked themselves back to the center and we were all just okay. But if we're looking at the facts on the ground right now, those facts tell a much different story. The Lutnick tariffs, the Trump tariffs, aren't just a proposal. They're a clear indication of a new kind of economic warfare. The 100% tariff on foreign memory is designed to force Samsung and SK Hynix to build in the United States. See, but those factories are years, years away from completion. Donald Trump will be far out of office before they'll even break ground on those factories. In the meantime, the supply of consumer-grade electronics is being choked off. We are definitely in 2026 seeing the death of disposable tech, right? And honestly, it's about time. If we can't buy our way out of this, we have to build our way out of it. We're also seeing a shift in how these electro states operate. See, China has spent the last decade securing the entire electric stack. They control the lithium, the battery management systems, the microkernels that run almost every smart device you own, ESP32. If a trade war turns into a code war, they don't need to fire a single shot. They just stop shipping the firmware updates for our solar inverters. They can turn off our green energy with a single command from a server in Shenzhen. This is the world that we are currently living in. This is the overlap, pardon the pun, but you know, between corporate greed, political posturing from a geopolitical spectrum, and a government that's currently functionally paralyzed. So the question for right now is, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to keep paying the monolith tax for the privilege of being spied on? Are you going to start building your own small stack? Are you going to wait for a government that can't even fund its own TSA agents to come and save your digital privacy? Or are you going to flash your router with OpenWRT and take control of your own network? Now, all of this is likely way above your pay grade. There's lots of information on the internet that's going to help you with this. And in a way, the overlap can help you with this if you engage with us on our social media. But this is the line in the sand. On one side, you have the big stack, right? It's the centralized, proprietary, increasingly fragile world of the internet. On the other side, you have the small stack. This is distributed, open source, resilient. At the overlap, we're choosing the latter. Grab a drink, mainly a beer. If you followed the recipe from the December episode, just kidding, we didn't have a recipe in the December episode. put your phone in a Faraday cage for an hour, or maybe just turn it off and mute all those signal chats that keep coming in. Put it in a drawer. We're going to deconstruct the monolith and see if we can build something better out of the pieces, right? This is the overlap. We're going to teach you how to be ungovernable by being useful. We're going to look at the memory tax, the shutdown shiver, and why a 10-year-old Dell Optiplex might be the most important piece of guerrilla infrastructure you will ever own. We're going into the deep today, and the water's cold, but at least it's our water. Let's get to work. All right, let's get into the actual numbers of the hardware famine, because it's important to understand that this is not just inflation, right? In the way your papaw talks about the price of a gallon of milk. This is a structural reallocation of global resources that basically erases the individual from the entire tech economy. I spent 4 or so hours last night on a pretty major retail site. I'm not going to tell you the name of it, but it rhymes with Screw Egg and Bamazon and D and H. Even some sketchy secondary markets like eBay and Facebook Marketplace. I'm just trying to find a high-capacity NVMe drive for my server migration. What I found was a digital graveyard. Everything that is actually worth owning is either out of stock or priced so high that you really have to wonder if the drive is actually made of solid gold and delivered by, you know, Amazon driver on a golden silk pillow. The objective fact of 2026 is that we're in a vertical price spike for memory and storage that has no historical precedent. A 2 terabyte Gen 4 NVMe drive, which was the bread and butter of any decent home lab a year ago, is now retailing for $380 on average. 32 gigs of DDR5 6000 RAM is sitting at $345 on a sale day. That is 210% in 90 days. If you look at the charts, it's not a curve. It's a wall. It's a cliff, sheer as hell, of silicon. And we are all expected to climb it while our pockets are currently being picked by our government. And the reason for this wall is, of course, AI cannibalism. The major players in the semiconductor space are Samsung, SK Hynix, and Micron. But they have made a cold, calculated, and honestly brutal business decision. They basically realize that the profit margins on selling a single stick of RAM to a guy in, I don't know, Oklahoma, are pathetic compared to the margins of selling a massive HBM3E module to an AI hyperscaler. High bandwidth memory is the lifeblood of this current AI boom that we're experiencing. Without it, the GPUs, the graphical processing units from NVIDIA, and the custom silicon from Google are just pretty expensive space heaters. So the manufacturers have kind of pivoted, right? They shifted the entirety of it, production capacity, toward the enterprise level. Micron actually just released that their HBM supply for the rest of 2026 is already 100% committed. That means everything that they intend to produce in 2026 is already spoken for. And they're not just selling what they have, they're selling what they plan to make for the next 10 to 12 months to the same 7 or 8 companies. This leaves the consumer market in a supply desert. When 85% of the world's memory production is spoken for before it even leaves the clean room, the remaining 15% becomes a Veblen good. It becomes something that basically only the wealthy or the desperate can afford. We're being told by the tech press that this is just the cost of progress, but what it really is a digital enclosure movement. They're fencing off the commons of affordable hardware so that only Big Stack can afford to compute at scale. If you can't afford the hardware to run your own models or host your own data, then you're forced to become a serf on that compute kingdom from the very people, the very companies that caused the shortage in the first place. It's this perfect closed loop system of extraction. It's basically a company store, but instead of coal and scrip, it's float pointing operations and subscription fees. And then we have the hard drive cliff. This one's one even more infuriating because it feels so regressive. We were told for 10 years that the spinning platter drive was dead. We were told the future is in solid state all the time. And then the AI firms realized they needed a place to dump their petabytes of training logs, their raw data sets, their warm embeddings. They needed warm storage, stuff that's cheaper than an SSD, but faster than a tape drive. So they did what they always do. They backed up the armored truck and bought everything. Western Digital CEO Irving Tan actually confirmed earlier this week that their entire hard drive production run for 2026 already sold out. I want you to think about that for a second. We are in the middle of February, and the biggest hard drive manufacturer on the planet has already closed the books for 2026. For anyone who isn't a tier one cloud provider, consumer sales now account for a pathetic 5% of Western Digital's total revenue. We are no longer the market. We are a legacy nuisance that they have to manage through price gouging. If you want a 20 petabyte drive for your Plex server or whatever, you are now competing with a data center in Virginia that's willing to pay double the MSRP just to keep their AI training from stalling. And let me tell you, you are not going to win that fight, not monetarily. Now, let's layer some geopolitical spice on top of this hardware famine, because I know this is dense. Enter the Lutnick factor, right? Our current Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, has been very, very vocal about his America First semiconductor policy. On paper, it does sound like a patriotic win. He wants to boost the U.S.'s share of leading-edge semiconductor manufacturing from nearly zero to 40%. He wants the $1 trillion in planned investments to make us the masters of our own silicon destiny. But here's the catch, or rather, a 100% tariff-sized catch. Lutnick has delivered a blunt ultimatum to the South Korean giants like Samsung. He told them that they will either pay a 100% tariff to import their chips, or they can build their factories in the U.S. The problem is that building a multi-billion dollar semiconductor factory isn't just like putting up a car wash. It takes years, sometimes a decade, to get the lithography machines calibrated. In the meantime, the threat of these tariffs has sent the retail market into an absolutely blind panic. Distributors in the U.S. are pre-gaming the inflation. They know that when these tariffs go live, the cost of an SSD will double overnight. So what do? They raise the price today. They're capturing that tariff margin before the policy is even signed. It's speculative pricing driven by geopolitical posturing. And guess who pays for it? The guy at home who just wants to upgrade his server before the next power outage. This leads us to the concept of the electrostate. And we're seeing the world split into two camps. On one side, you have China, which has spent the last decade securing the entire electric stack. They control the lithium, the cobalt, the battery management systems, and the microkernels that run almost every smart device you own. They've become the first true electrostate. They do not need to fire a missile to hurt us. They just need to stop shipping the firmware updates. They've turned our infrastructure into a hostage situation. On the other side, you have the U.S. You know them. You live here, which is currently in the middle of a partial government shutdown. And this is where the snark really starts to kind of hurt. We are arguing over budget line items while our digital sovereignty is being sold out to the highest bidder. As of today, the Department of Homeland Security is basically unfunded. That includes CISA, talked about them earlier, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. I want to be clear about the facts here. CISA is operating with a skeleton crew of employees that aren't getting paid. They are sitting at their desks, they're staring at threat monitors, trying to catch state-sponsored hacking groups before they drop a logic bomb. And they're doing it wondering if they can afford food tomorrow. Imagine you're a threat hunter. You are the thin, digital line between the electrostate and our power grid. You're a professional, but you're also a human being who hasn't been paid in 4 days because of a budget deadlock in DC. How focused are you? How much do you currently care about the long-term stability of the big stack when the big stack can't even figure out how to process your paycheck right now. That's the overlap of the monolith. The government is paralyzed by its own internal politics, and the market's paralyzed by its own greed for AI compute. We're being squeezed from both sides. We're being told that we have to pay four times as much for the hardware we need to stay sovereign, while the agencies that are supposed to protect that hardware are on furlough. This is a techno-feudalist dream. This is exactly what J.D. Vance creams his pants to every night on the couch. The goal of the monolith is to make you a permanent tenant. They want you to stop owning your hardware because, oh, it's just too expensive. It's too difficult to secure. They want you to move everything to the cloud, which is really just someone else's computer, where they can charge you a monthly subscription to access your own files. They want to turn your home into a service that they can switch off if your social credit or your subscription status fluctuates. And they want you to do this while they enjoy the safety of a big stack that is increasingly guarded by a crumbling federal infrastructure. This is exactly why the small stack is the only logical response. If the market won't sell us new drives, we have to learn to maintain the ones we have. If the government won't pay the people guarding the fiber, we build our own wireless mesh. If the big stack is a house of cards, we stop building our lives on the top floor. We are seeing the death of disposable tech. We have to become digital homesteaders. I want you to think about the last time you actually owned a piece of software. I mean, like, truly owned it, right? No internet connection required to activate it. No as-a-service monthly fee. No telemetry phoning home to tell a marketing firm how many times you clicked the save button. It feels like a fantasy now, doesn't it? Like, I don't know, what was it? Photoshop 2006? That is because the big stack has spent 20 years conditioning us to accept the role of tenant. They've convinced us that convenience is worth the price of our autonomy. But as the 2026 commodity war shows, that convenience is a trap.
It's a trap.
When the supply chain breaks, the tenant is the first one to get evicted. Now, this commodity war is not just about RAM and hard drives, right? It's about the verticalization of power. The AI firms want the hardware so they can create models that will eventually replace the small stack workers. They're using our own tools to build the walls that will keep us out. And they're buying up the very chips that were supposed to democratize information so that they can centralize it. And they're doing it with the blessings of a government that's too busy fighting over the budget to notice the foundations of our digital independence are currently being excavated. So when I talk about the memory tax, I'm not just complaining about prices. I mean, that's what's affecting me right now. But I'm talking about a tax on your ability to think for yourself. I'm talking about a tax on your ability to store your own history and run your own code. It's a tax designed to make sovereignty too expensive for the common person. But as we'll see soon, the small stack doesn't need to be the latest and greatest to be effective. It just needs a dedicated administrator who refuses to be a tenant. We're going to look at the small stack manifesto and why a used 10-year-old server running a lean, sovereign OS is more powerful than a brand new high-end machine that you do not truly control. We are living in the age of the electro state, and the monolith is hungry. It wants your data. It wants your hardware, and it wants your attention. But it can't have mine. And if you follow the small stack path, it can't have yours either. I'm happy to teach you about how to be ungovernable by being useful. We're going to show you how to build a world that stays online when the big stack goes dark. Because in 2026, the only thing that you can truly rely on is code that you can compile on hardware that you hold in your hand. So let's keep moving. This brings us to the small stack manifesto. Earlier was kind of the funeral for our digital innocence. So this is the part where we start digging the tunnels. We've established that the big stack is a predatory landlord currently going through a midlife crisis, and the hardware market has been hijacked by a handful of AI companies that treat your home server like a personal insult. So what do? We stop being users. That's it. End of episode, right? Oh, wait, no. We move from being consumers of products to hosting our own infrastructure. For the last couple of years, I've been a vocal advocate for systems like Casa OS, Umbral OS. I really liked the vision. It was beautiful. It was easy. It kind of made self-hosting feel like something you could recommend to your neighbor, right? Without having to try to spend 3 hours explaining what a Docker container is. But in the 2026 reality, pretty is a luxury that we can't afford anymore. When every gigabyte of RAM is priced like a rare earth mineral or a national cybersecurity defenders at CISA are working for free, easy usually means heavy. And heavy means you're wasting resources you can no longer replace. I spent the last week in my office here at home doing something that feels like like digital surgery, right? I'm wiping my home servers clean. I'm moving away from the kind of app store model of self-hosting and migrating everything to raw Debian-based systems, putting Casa OS on the top as a management layer and some Proxmox built into there. Now, for the uninitiated, this might sound like I'm rearranging the decks on the Titanic, but this for me, this is kind of a declaration of independence, right? When you run a prepackaged like one-click OS like Umbral, you're still a tenant in their ecosystem. You're kind of waiting for them to update the apps. You're dependent on their middleware. And most importantly, you're running a massive amount of background noise just to keep that pretty dashboard looking cute. But in a world where 32 gigs of RAM costs $400, you can't afford background noise. You can't afford telemetry. You cannot afford that pretty UI that sits there and eats 4 gigs of RAM just to show you a fancy clock and some animated graphs. For me, Debian is kind of the universal operating system because it's a survivalist tool. It's the digital equivalent of a 1970s diesel truck. It'll run until just about anything happens. You can fix it with a wrench. It doesn't need to call home to a mothership in Virginia or California just to start the engine. By moving to this small stack built on a minimum Debian kernel and Docker, you're moving toward a zero-waste digital lifestyle. Every Docker container I run has a precisely measured amount of compute. I use Vault Warden for my password manager. For cloud storage and things like that, I use Nextcloud, and I use Home Assistant for my home automation. These are no longer apps I'm using, right? They're services. I am providing those services for myself. And because I'm using a lean operating system, I can run about twice as many of these services on the same hardware that I already own. And this is the right to remain on your own silicon. And this is where the partial government shutdown becomes a perfect metaphor for why this technical shift matters on a human level. Today, the Department of Homeland Security is essentially paralyzed. CISA is operating on the skeleton crew, and they're wondering if they can afford their February gas bill. If your digital life is tied to cloud services of massive corporations, you're essentially living in a house guarded by a private security firm that just stopped paying the guards. You were the target. When the big stack is in a budget stalemate, right? The small stack keeps the lights on. My password manager doesn't care if Congress has a meltdown. My home server does not need a handshake from a CISA verified data center to let me into my own encrypted files. By self-hosting on lean, sovereign hardware, I am creating a local redundancy that is immune to the drama of Washington, D.C. and the corporate greed of the hardware manufacturers. I'm basically air-gapping my life from the failure of the monolith and the AI bubble. The shift also changes your fundamental relationships with hardware. Earlier, we talked about the hardware famine, right? If you can't buy a new server because the AI firms took all of your memory, you kind of have to learn to love the one that you have. This is the core of the small stack manifesto. In 2026, a 10-year-old Dell Optiplex or a used ThinkPad is not e-waste that you're trying to get rid of. It's a political asset. These machines were built before every chip had an AI NPU baked in to track your keystrokes and report back to a central hub. They are unbackdoored. There is no backdoor to these. They're repairable. And when you strip away the Windows bloat and install a minimal Linux kernel, they're actually still pretty fast. We could have spent 20 years being conditioned to believe that we need to upgrade our devices every 18 months. We were told the cloud was an inevitable superior evolution of computing. Hey, look, I work in it. I do it every day. I extol the benefits of it for companies. But the 2026 commodity war has shown us the cloud is just a way for companies to rent you back the hardware they stole from the market. It's the ultimate extraction machine. The Small Stack Manifesto is about refusing that rental agreement, right? It's about saying, look, I've got 16 gigs of RAM and a 4 terabyte hard drive, and I'm going to make them do more than your $1,000 a year subscription ever could. As of right now, the average AI subscription is $200 a year to steal your water and your electricity from your local grid. When you own your own infrastructure, you are building your digital homestead. You're saying, that data is mine, my privacy is not negotiable, and your ability to communicate does not depend on a corporate terms of service agreement that can change at the whim of a board of directors. You move the vertical model of power, where everything is controlled from the top down, to a horizontal model of power, where we connect directly with each other. Earlier, I talked about the electro state, right, and how China has secured the entire electric stack. They control the firmware in your light bulbs and the software in your solar converters. If we keep buying these black box appliances, we are building our own cages. But the small stack's an open box, right? Like, it's transparent. It's auditable. It's the gray man theory of computing. You remember we talked earlier about the gray man. Just be a gray rock. You are not flashy. You're not high maintenance. And you are very, very hard to track. And look, this is not just like prepper LARPing for IT people. This is the only rational response to a world where the government and the market have both abandoned the individual. When the National Cybersecurity Agency is furloughed, you have to be your own CISA. When the hardware market is hijacked, you have to be your own recycler and your own repairman. You basically have to be ungovernable by being useful to yourself and your community. Imagine a neighborhood where 10 people are running their own small stack servers. They're sharing files. They're hosting their own encrypted chat servers. They're managing their own home security. They're not dependent on Comcast or Google. And they're certainly not dependent on a functional federal budget, right? They've created their own little microgrid of information that is autopoietic, if you listen to our previous episode on that. It maintains itself and creates itself. This is the vision of a small stack. It's to move away from the fragility of the monolith toward the resilience of a mesh. It's about realizing that we don't need the latest and greatest to be powerful. We just need to be sovereign. We need to own the tools of our own existence. Because in 2026, the most dangerous thing you can be is a user who doesn't know how to code and doesn't know where their data is stored. So if you're sitting at home looking at an old laptop or an old desktop that hasn't been turned on in 2 years, don't think of it as obsolete. Think of it as your special weirdo prepper bunker, right? Like, wipe the drive, install a Linux operating system, learn how to manage a Docker container, take back your life from the subscription economy. We're gonna talk about the transport layer, right? Like, how to connect these nodes using a mesh. We're gonna look at LoRa and Meshtastic and MeshCore and why a solar powered radio node is the final piece of the small stack puzzle. The monolith is hungry, and honestly, it's starting to eat its own. But the small stack is too lean and too tough to swallow. We are building a world that stays online when the big stack goes dark, because in the end, the only thing you can truly rely on is what you can make at home. Let's keep building. Now, we've spent the last, 38 minutes or so. Thanks for listening to me, by the way. We have spent the last 38 minutes dissecting the collapse of the big stack and defending the small stack. We established that the government is essentially a ghost ship right now, and that the market for memory and storage has been hijacked by AI firms that treat your personal hardware like coal for their furnace. But all the self-hosting in the world does not matter if the big fiber goes dark. If the ISP decides to shut down your local node because they can no longer afford the Lutnick tariff on their infrastructure, or if they decide your sovereign server is a violation of their terms of service, your bunker is just a very expensive paperweight. So this brings us to the final piece of the puzzle, the transport layer. This is where we talk about the mesh again. We talk about the gray man approach to digital survival. For those of you who have not been following along in the forums or the local meetups, a group of us have been very busy. We're not waiting for some citywide fiber initiative or a federal grant that will never come. We are building a parallel infrastructure using long-range radio, which stands for, you heard me talk about it before, LoRa, L-O-R-A. I want you to think about the hardware for a second. We're talking about something like a Rack Wireless 19007 WizBlock or Heltec V3, V4 module. These things are smaller than a deck of cards, right? They run on as much power as a keychain flashlight. You could basically slap a small solar panel on one, put it in a weatherproof case and strap it to a tree or a chimney or whatever. And all of a sudden, you are a node in a decentralized, encrypted peer-to-peer network that does not give a single damn about a government shutdown or a corporate budget meeting. This is kind of the gray man logic applied to packets. In previous episodes, we talked about pattern recognition. The big stack lives and breathes on patterns. They want to know who you're talking to, when you're talking to them, what you're buying. They want to metadata you into submission. Flock cameras, but a LoRa packet bouncing between backyard nodes in a suburban neighborhood is subnoise. It doesn't follow the toll roads of the traditional internet. It's basically an encrypted whisper that bypasses the checkpoints entirely. It's a system designed to be ungovernable because it does not have a central hub to seize or a CEO to subpoena. When CISA is furloughed and the big stack defenders are at home wondering how to pay their bills, the centralized internet becomes a playground for the worst actors on the planet. We are seeing a spike in zero-day exploits and ransomware because the watchmen are off the clock. But a mesh network is autopoietic. There goes that word again. It maintains and creates itself. If one node goes down because a neighbor moves or a battery fails, the network just routes around the gap. It is a self-healing social contract written in C++ and radio waves. It's the ultimate insurance policy against the structural neglect we are seeing in the federal government right now. Think back to our discussion on the Universal Trust Network. How do we verify who is a good neighbor when the verified badges of 2026 are behind an $8 a month paywall and the federal consumer watchdogs are completely closed for business? You build that trust into the mesh. You provide a service. You become a hop for your neighbor's emergency signal. You trade local information. Hey, the pharmacy on the corner just got a fresh shipment of insulin without that data being scraped, indexed, and sold to BlackRock. You're creating a local microgrid of information that is a robust system because it's small. Again, this is not prep or LARPing. This is the logical conclusion of the Small Stack Manifesto. If you own your own OS via Debian or Ubuntu, and you own your own services via CasaOS, and the final step is owning the wires, right? Or in this case, the airwaves. You're moving from being the user of the internet to being a participant in the network. And in 2026, that is a radical distinction. The big stack wants you to believe that infrastructure is something that's given to you by some higher power, right? Be a corporation or a state. They want you to believe that without their satellites and their fiber optics, you are helpless and you are alone. But the reality is the big stack is the one that's helpless. It's bloated, it's over-leveraged, and it's currently being guarded by people who are not being paid. The small stack and the mesh are the only things that are actually robust in this kind of environment. They're the only things that don't have a single point of failure. In the boardroom in California or a committee room in DC, when the government is at a budget stalemate and the AI firms are hoarding all the chips, the mesh is the only thing that keeps the signal from fading. I want you to imagine the potential here. So we're not just talking about sending text messages, right? We're talking about decentralized sensors. We're talking about community-run weather stations, flood monitors, and security alerts that don't depend on a cloud subscription. We're talking about a world where the Internet of Things actually belongs to the people who own the things. It's the reversal of techno-feudalism. Instead of being a tenant on someone else's digital homestead, you are the lord of your own wireless manor. The overlap between corporate greed, geopolitical posturing, and state failure has created a window of opportunity. For 20 years, we've been told that we need to give up our privacy for the sake of convenience. We're told that we needed to give up our hardware for the sake of the cloud. But as the 2026 commodity war shows, it was always a bait and switch. It was a trap. The cloud is just a way for them to charge you for the hardware that they took away from you. But the small stack and the mesh is how we take it back. It's important to understand the scale of what we're doing here, right? We're not trying to replace the global internet. That is a fool's errand. We're trying to build a parallel infrastructure. We are building lifeboats while the Titanic is still arguing about the price of lounge chairs. If the global internet stays up, that's great. If that's true, our mesh is a fun hobby and a fun private channel for friends or when you go hiking or out in the woods. But if big fiber goes dark because a state-sponsored actor realizes that CISA is currently operating with a skeleton crew, that mesh or that big radio network in the ham radio world, or all of the multiple projects that go into LoRaWAN, becomes the only way to coordinate with your community. It becomes the only way to maintain the social contract when the state version has been suspended. So look, my final advice for this episode is simple. Stop waiting for the big stack to be fixed. It's not broken. It's working exactly as it's intended to extract every bit of value from your life until there's nothing left but a digital husk. Wipe your old hardware today. Don't sell it. Don't recycle it. and don't throw it away. That 10-year-old laptop is a sovereign node waiting to happen. Flash it with a minimum kernel, buy a LoRa module before the tariffs make them cost as much as your mortgage, and start talking to your neighbors about building a node. Speaking of which, the average LoRa node costs like $30 to $40. We can all work a couple hours and maybe knock that out if we need to, or sell something on Facebook Marketplace, like the people who have realized that RAM and SSDs have gone up on Facebook Marketplace and are gouging every one of their neighbors. Talk to your neighbors about building a node, right? The monolith is hungry, and it's starting to eat its own foundations. It wants your data, because that's what it thrives on. It wants your hardware, and it wants your attention. It can't have mine, but if you follow the small stack path, it can't have yours either. We're building a world that stays online even when the big stack goes dark. We are building a world where the A word isn't a scary philosophy, but a practical reality of being a good neighbor. This has been another solo episode of The Overlap. If you would, do me a favor. If you think somebody would be interested in this episode, send them a link. Let them know about it. Send it however you need to. You can click the share button on your podcasting app if you're using Apple or Spotify. Please give us a 5-star rating. That would be incredibly helpful to the algorithms. It helps other people find us. It's a very cheap and easy way for you to spread the word that we are doing here at The Overlap. Look, I know the landscape looks bleak, right? I know the hardware famine is real and that the government shutdown is infuriating. When that happens, when things seem to go out of control, I think it's important, at least for me, to look at the things that I can change and the ways that I can change it. So look around your room again. Those flashing lights, that is the signal. Keep your nodes high, keep your stacks small and your tracks smaller, and never let them tell you that you are just a user. You're an admin. You are sovereign. And here for The Overlap, I am Joshua. We will talk to you next time.